This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Power listener, of course, it is that time. We're getting into the second hour. And one of the conversations that, of course, it is Monday and we often get into it. It is a conversation around Africa in focus. We always take this opportunity to look at all things Africa, everything that's happening on the continent. I really try to, of course, just make sense around, you know, how these things are going to impact us in certain ways as well. And just really have a continental lens around it as well. And so, Paulusner, that's going to be our conversation for, of course, our Africa in focus conversation. And at this point in time, there's Africa Oil Week. And so all things oil is an interesting conversation. It's been a big one when it comes to petrol prices and everything around this, the geopolitical context around it as well. And so certainly I think it's going to be an interesting conversation to get into around also the comings and goings on the continent. And so for this particular conversation, Paulusner, we are joined online, of course, by Taona Kokera, who is a director of infrastructure, financial advisory services, at Mazars, to really then help us make sense around everything that's got to do with Oil Week on the continent. And certainly, I think, as I said, just to get into some of the interesting nuggets around everything that's got to do with this particular fuel as well on the continent. Taona, good evening, sir, and thank you very much for joining us.
Good evening. Thank you to yourself, and good evening to our listeners.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, really just to, you know, get into a view around, first and foremost, the Africa Oil Week that is being hosted in Cape Town between the 3rd and the 7th of October. Maybe let's just get into an understanding around what that is about, etc., before we actually get into, I guess, some of the substantive conversations around oil in general for the continent.
Okay, good. So this is a conference. This is a conference that's happening from the 3rd to the 7th, where the major international oil organizations, as well as the public sector, which is the government represented by the ministers and the key government officials, come together to see how best they can unpack the nuances around the oil and gas sector on the continent, and specifically in Africa, to just make sure that we unpack the real value and see how best we can work together as a continent with respect to that.
And I mean, just looking at the previous iterations of this particular meet, what would your view be around, you know, how it's been designed first and foremost historically, and some of the things that have come out on that, whether it's pledges, whether it's certain things that are, or cooperations, and all of those things that actually have got to do with, of course, everyone that is coming into this particular meet?
So I think for me, based on where I stand, because remember, I'm just a delegate and I'm just a participant and I'm not part of the organizers, but I would say it's a good transition from the, the COVID type of conferences that we used to have. And now we're going fully, face-to-face and with all the COVID regulations relaxed. So it's good from that perspective. It's a breath of fresh air. Face-to-face always beats anything. And, putting a face to the voice and to the name makes us connect. And that connection is what gives us the ability to come up with intelligent ideas on how best we can transform the oil and gas sector on the continent.
Sure. And then I think just on the point, and then segueing exactly to that around really looking at a transformation of the oil and gas sector on the continent. At this point in time, at a high level and a macro level, what are the trends that you're currently seeing? Where is the continent stacking up in terms of where we are at an industry development level? And then maybe some of the things that you feel at this point in time should be mainstream in the conversation, getting into, of course, this, Africa Oil Week.
So I think firstly, let me bring you back to history and then going to the current affairs, and then we unpack what it means into the future. So, you know, the Organization of African Union was founded on the 25th of May and that was in 1963, right? So the idea from the founding fathers of this organization, that's the likes of Kwame Nkrumah, was to see Africa trade as an economic hub, which is the intracontinental trading. And
sure.
Now we have the Free Continental Trade Agreement that's been signed, meaning to say we can trade as a continent. And we've got close to 8% of the world's oil reserves in Africa, which produces about 7.2 million barrels per day of crude oil. And sadly, some of our African countries are actually importing this from other continents, but yet we can trade together. And the crude is not being refined in its totality, meaning to say we only have got a refining capacity that is close to only 3.7 million barrels, which is close to half what we have and what we produce annually. We are exporting raw in terms of the crude, and then we are also importing it as refined product. So if you look at the economics, it doesn't make sense. And we are not tapping into the real value of what we can get out of our reserves as a continent, simply because we don't have adequate, I would say, further refining capacity that can get us to then export and extract maximum value. And this, in essence, it means creating jobs and bringing incomes to a household unit level, and hence improving the quality of life for our people. So that, I would say, is some of the nuances that we ought to be looking at when we look at the sector from a holistic perspective.
Sure. And I mean, just, you know, and we'll start with the conversation around the refining capacity that is, I guess, not here in essence, in terms of the continent, where we're finding ourselves, you know, where we are producing about 7.2 million barrels of crude oil per day. And as you said, we're refining just over 3 million per day. When we are then looking at that, is your view that then we should be having a massive infrastructure conversation around building refining capacity? And over and above that, is there any data points that you have followed around kind of the multiplier effect of kind of more, you know, upstream development of, you know, refining capacity and how it translates into kind of other sectors and adjacent sectors as well, and all of those things in a way in which we can also maybe start to do a little bit of an economic mapping assessment around also just beyond the fact that we, you know, we are just exporting, you know, our reserves in a very raw format, and there's an opportunity for beneficiation, but also just quantifying exactly what is being left on the table by virtue of us actually at this point in time not beneficiating at the level at which we should be.
Okay, good. So I think the beneficiation is one conversation, but the most critical conversation is energy security.
Sure.
Because I'm sure the current geopolitical conversations have shown you the impact of not having energy security a pillar of any economy. So for us to drive any economy, and the industrial revolution has been moving from the first, the second, the fourth, to the fourth, fifth, by virtue of the fact that there's adequate energy. So apart from the beneficiation, it's also critical because it's part of the important aspects of any economy, because energy security is key.
Mm.
That's number one. Number two, yes, there is need for consolidating refining capacity, building refining capacity from an infrastructure perspective, but it comes with the issues of energy transition, whereby some of the refineries that are operational have to comply with the clean fuels too, which is a massive investment, and it's a compliance investment that doesn't necessarily bring a direct economic return
value, yeah.
Environmental economic returns by reducing the impact of the environment. So from that perspective, you then realize that it is affecting the investments that's going into our refining capacity. And you, as you have seen, most of the refineries in the country are being converted to storage facilities and utilized as part of import terminals, in order to keep the country wet from that perspective. So It's a very, very complex matter, and I wouldn't celebrate seeing the green bonds flourish on the Johannesburg patch whilst the men on the streets of Johannesburg are suffering.
I really like that. I wouldn't be celebrating all these green bonds because I think they are presenting a new challenge for all the incumbents in this particular space. And while we are trying to solve for a complex issue around energy security, Paulus, now we are in conversation with Upoti Taona Kokera, who is a director of Infrastructure Finance Advisory Services at Mazars South Africa. And we are, of course, reflecting on one, just kind of the current state of oil and gas industry on the continent, and also looking at some of the complexities that we are currently facing at this point in time. Of course, there is, I guess, an issue around our refining capacity, and also how some of those now have become storage, in essence, spaces from an infrastructure point of view. We are also looking at complex issues around energy security as being the primary thing that we should be at this point in time double-clicking on and making sure that this is the thing that we're focusing on, but also getting into the cost of compliance and this whole green transition and green energy movement that is coming through, in a way in which, of course, it is creating certain, I think, developmental pressure points as well, because it's just increasing the cost of investment into this particular sector. And so these are some of the challenges that we are seeing. And we're also reflecting, of course, as I said, Powerlessner earlier, that it is Africa Oil Week that is coming in Cape Town at this point in time. It's between the 3rd and the 7th of October. And this is I guess the back of that, on the back of that, we are also having these conversations and looking at potentially some of the important things that we should be thinking about when we get into that particular context. And we're going to go very quickly, of course, for an ad break. And when we come back, we're going to pick up the conversation with Upoti Taona, really then getting into some of the things that he already has alluded to around, one, the cost of investment on the continent. We're going to talk about an energy transition, and we're going to talk about, of course, the role of technology as well, and emergent technologies as well. He spoke about 4IR. And how do we think about that as part of our future enablers for the growth and development of our oil and gas sectors on the continent? Paulusner, we are back. And as I said earlier on, we are in conversation with Taona Kokera, who is a director of Infrastructure Finance Advisory Services at Mazars South Africa. And we are, of course, still continuing our conversation around Africa Oil Week and really getting into some of the macro conversations. Now we're trying to get into a little bit of a micro lens around the development in that we need to see in this particular sector, particularly looking at the sector as a network industry in the way in which it is an enabler, of course, for sustainable growth and development. And this is why I think that that point that was made earlier on about energy security is such an important one, because it really does double click on the role that the sector plays in being a network industry. And so, Paulusner, as I said, is that we are continuing our conversation with Taona to really then get a sense around, you know, I guess getting into a blue skies thinking around particularly this oil and gas industry, and really getting into a point where we're able to reimagine and leverage these platforms to be able to actually have meaningful and sensible conversations around how to really support sustainable development for this particular industry. So Taona, I'm going to bring you back into the conversation. And as I said earlier on, is that you know, one of the things that is a big pressure point for us is, and I think you already alluded to it, is this pressure to transition very quickly into the green economy at whatever cost, because for whatever reasons, because I think it's because at this point in time we aren't the authors of the capital, and those who are authors of the capital actually are then in essence bullying the continent to transition really quickly, irrespective of the developmental costs that may be embedded in that. So Taona, maybe bring us back into that conversation and saying, how can we reimagine a sensible, a pragmatic, and ultimately a just transition when we look at this particular sector?
Okay. I think from my end, right, they call it the just energy transition, but in as much as it's the just energy transition, it doesn't mean that it's justice to the men on the street, because imagine a man that has been employed in a coal-fired power plant that now all of a sudden has to be out of a job simply because of the transition. So I'd rather call it a responsible energy transition, to an extent that the way it is implemented, it will be in such a way that you reskill those that were employed in the, I would say, unclean conventional energy sources to the more renewable energy sources to an extent. And let me say, you cannot embrace a green revolution that is not underpinned by an industrial revolution.
Sure.
So the companies, in essence, should be a spark on the industrial revolution to increase the productive capacity, to ensure that the continent is exporting, we feed ourselves, we are adding value to our resources and then use the energy.
On that reskilling bit, sorry, Putin, who's getting it right? I mean, who's been able to, you know, transition from a particular, I guess, source of energy? In this context, we are talking about coal as, I guess, what is being deemed now as a dirty source of energy. Who's actually successfully then created models that we could potentially learn from around how to actually build sustainable programs for reskilling and upskilling to then inform the redevelopment of more greener sub-industries?
I think I would say most of the independent power producers have been using the, I would say, the engineers and the technicians that were also traditionally used to build the coal-fired power plants. So to an extent, there has been training on renewable energy. And I would say the maturity profile of this in South Africa is quite high because I think these rounds have been running from round one to the current round. And the IRP plan is actually looking forward to thousands and thousands of megawatts that will be procured. So I would say, I think even from the curriculum perspective, you're seeing that renewable energy, sustainability, environment is becoming topical.
Yeah.
And even from a reporting perspective. So it has become a core part of most of the large entities that are listed, unlisted, and that have got a social responsibility to ensure that they are responsible organizations in our economy.
And just getting back into, I guess, the money we're leaving on the table as a continent, and if I can just put it that way, and I call it the developmental value as well. Like we said earlier on, we've got about 3.7 million barrels that we are refining against about, what, 7.2 million barrels that we are producing per day. One, geographically, where are we seeing most of the refining capacity on the continent? We know the likes of Ghana, Nigeria, and then you come back further down, the likes of Namibia, and parts of our coast as well. We've got Mozambique as well, and of course a little bit there in the central Western African region as well. This is a massive continent, so one, where do you, I guess, from your kind of vantage point, do you see that we are leaving value on the table, and where some of the latent demand is for some of this investment that we should be double-clicking on and making sure then that we use that as a critical enabler for the development that we want to see?
Let me say, without delving into the details of the jurisdictions, you see the recently signed Africa Free Continental Trade Agreement,
yep.
54 members, right? And all those countries utilize energy as part of the drivers of their economies, right? So that's a demand that is there that can be that can be used to underpin the, I would say, the offtake.
Sure.
That can then justify investments in the different jurisdictions that are crude oil producing. So to an extent, I would say essentially it's about, picking up that free continental trade agreement that is gathering dust in shelves, dust it up and make sure that we put it into, implement it and get going with that from that perspective. So I would say it's more from that perspective.
Sure. And I mean, I think you are touching on, I guess, one of the points that I would have hoped to get to a point to discussing as well, is this thing that you're saying is collecting dust in the shelves. It is this Africa Free Continental Trade Agreement, insofar as it really does open a window for more meaningful intracontinental trade. And I guess most of us are probably starting to feel like, this is kind of a theoretical conscript. We kind of all like the idea of it. But because the continent is so complex, even the legal frameworks are designed differently based on who colonized us. And so if you look at kind of, the legal infrastructure in the Francophone countries, it'll look very different where there was a British colony, where there was Germany as a colony, and where there was Portugal as a colonizers as well. And so these are the realities that we're facing. And are these the things then that we maybe weren't honest enough around how much this will be a hurdle for sustainable development for the continent, insofar as we are looking at the Africa Free Continental Trade Area and Free Continental Trade Agreement as an enabler for more intra-continental trade?
But you know what? Before I give you an answer, right, I just want to tell you about what I desire to be in the future, right? I desire to be a politician, right? Then,
right? We'll throw eggs in your face, yes, man.
I won't be in a position to answer the political connotations with respect to the discussion. But, however, let me bring you back to the economic side of it, right?
Yeah.
I am a very strong proponent and advocate of a first world Africa. Right.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, those that have done it and those that have successfully turned their economies from a third to a first world have got the same human anatomy as you and I.
Mm.
So it's a matter of changing the way we think.
Sure.
Yeah. And let me remind you, there are some economies that got their independence the same time as we did, right? Around 1957. I don't want to speak to the specifics.
Yeah.
But Singapore, Korea, Malaysia, right? They are first world countries now, right? But where are we as a continent? And what are we doing, right? And I always like quoting the late Archbishop Desmond Tutu Scott that says, do the little bits of good that you have to do in your small little corners, because it's the combination of those small little bits when combined, they've got the potential to overwhelm the world. So I do believe that we can do it in our lifetime. And it's something that we ought to, make decisions on a daily basis to drive our economies to that direction. Imagine, brah, in every day, right? Mm. The continent is close to 1 billion people, right? 1 billion decisions being made by everyone, from the CEO to the janitor, to say, we are taking our economy to a first world economy. Don't you think it's something that will be doable? But it's about, taking the sustainable steps and working as a collective to ensure that we leave our continent in a better state than we found it.
Taona for president. I heard you when you said you are in another life you want to be a politician. I feel like you actually want to be it even in this life.
No, in this life, I'm simply an advisor.
For sure.
That's why I'm judging your questions.
You're doing what politicians would ordinarily do. They would dodge the questions. So we absolutely appreciate. But Taona, thank you very much. Really bringing us into some of the important considerations we should be thinking about when we are getting particularly into Oil Week Africa, as well as just looking at and saying that it is important that as much as this kind of free continental trade area agreement becomes a thing, that first and foremost, it actually starts in our own jurisdictions. Let's do the little bit where we are, and that also can inform actually and support the thinking in some of the other jurisdictions maybe that may not have the level of infrastructure maturity that we may have, for example, from a South African point of view. But I think a lot of the points you made, Budia, well taken around just ensuring that we start where we are, particularly though, however, with a contextual view around how this becomes an embedded enabler for overall intracontinental development and trade. And so certainly thank you very much, Budi, and wishing you, of course, a productive week in Cape Town. I know the weather is not as colorful as it is in Johannesburg, but you shall live vicariously through us.
Thank you, Budi. I wish one day we'll have another conversation in a first world Africa.
A conversation in a first world Africa. Paul, listener, and there you heard it. That was Tawona Kokero, who is the Director of Infrastructure Finance Advisory Services at Mazars South Africa. Really, then, of course, really, you know, I love people who are optimists, man, because I'm a relentless optimist. And he's really saying that the future is closer to us than we think. And the future of a developed economy and a developed continent is closer to us than we think. We are the ones who are sleeping on ourselves. And certainly, I think again, very reflective conversation that we had there with Uputaona and Paulusna as well. Really, I think, must be the kind of conversation that does help us think more intently about ensuring that we do the little bit that we can in our corner, and hopefully that becomes inspirational for overall continental sustainable development.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.